Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and today I'm excited. I've got an old friend that's on the show with me today, Mr. Kenny Keiser. He hails from over around Kansas City somewhere, but I'm sure you've heard the name Kenny Keiser if you've read any outdoor material in your lifetime, because Keiser's been around for decades and decades. And this guy is pretty incredible due to the fact that he's been inducted into several Hall of Fames. One of them is the Missouri Waterfowl Hall of Fame. He's also in the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, and he's in the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. And Kenny, I'm sure I missed a few. I know there's probably others, but that's a pretty good induction. I usually don't give that good of an introduction to riders. You know, they're just riders, but you are a little different, Kenny.
Yeah, that's what my family always said too. He is different.
Well, never change, buddy. I tell you what, you've had a good time in your lifetime. You've produced a lot of material. And Kenny, people, I know hundreds of people over the decades have asked you, you know, several questions related to writing. First and foremost, why you ever decided to do that? And then how did you become an outdoor writer?
Well, as a boy, I was constantly working on the farm. I didn't play many high school sports because I was on the farm working all the time. And the farm was some miles from where we live, so I drove up there every night and took care of it. So, you know, I really didn't have a lot of the sports that people had and a lot of the activities in school. But one of the neighbors and an uncle gave me all of his outdoor magazines.
Ah.
And I would read these things cover to cover. I read the advertisements. Man, I read everything.
I remember those days.
I was ate up with it.
Yeah.
And so when I graduated from high school, by that time I'm on my own. I'm trying to figure out how to pay the bills. I'm working on a truck dock. I'm bouncing in a bar on weekends, and I'm getting in as much money as I can so I can finally go to a junior college and start taking some writing classes.
Really?
I knew there was nothing else I wanted to do more than be an outdoor writer.
Wow. Well, I have a similar story, and I'm a little bit older than you, but I can remember I always said my mom kept two sources of good reading material in the house. We were pretty poor, but of course one of them was the Bible and the other one was Reader's Digest. I said, man, I wore that Reader's Digest out.
So did I.
Yeah, it was a great little magazine. Remember, it had little nature stories in it, and I used to read those. And I read those so much, so long, I thought, well, I can do that too. And then by the time I was 7 or 8 years old, I was paying for my own subscription to Outdoor Life, you know, and just fell in love with Jack O'Connor and those guys. Now, Kenny, thinking back again, I'm probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years older than you, but when you were doing all that reading as a youngster, who were some of your favorite outdoor authors back then that inspired you?
I'm glad you mentioned that. First of all, you're 4 years older than me.
Four.
And yeah, I'm 71. And secondly, there was many. There was Joel Vance. There was Uncle Homer Circle. There was God. There was a guy by the name of, what was his name? He bought Arbel Gassler's Dick Cotis. People like that. And you know, one of the great miracles of my business is after I got established and I started going to ICAST shows, which in them days was called AFMA, and I started going to writers' conferences, OWAA in them days, Outdoor Writers Association of America, I got to meet these guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was in shock. They were human like me, and I really liked them.
Well, I can guarantee you, Keiser, you know, we're moving up into that dinosaur age of outdoor writers. And I guarantee you there are young folks that are meeting you or that are just as much in awe of you as you were those guys, you know. So the circle, you know, the circle's finally come full circle, I guess you would say. But wasn't it incredible to meet guys like Joel Vance? I can remember, you know, when the Missouri Outdoor Communicators started, and I went to that very first conference down in Eminence, Missouri, I guess, and met Joel Vance, Spence Turner. Now, I knew Spence Turner, but Joel Vance and Monty Burch, some of those other guys, got to meet them face to face. I was so intimidated, just terribly intimidated. I thought, Yeah.
The first time I had any dealings with Joel Vance, he called me on the phone. He wanted me to do some stories for him on the conservation side. And he called me up. He said, "Hi, I'm Joel Vance." I said, "Well, I'll be damned." He said, well, you may be. But I'm still Joel Vance.
Yeah, that'd be a Joel Vance.
Have him call me. The only thing I could think to do was,
yeah. Yeah, that's a Joel Vance response for sure. But yeah,
what an incredible
person. And of course, you've been in Missouri Outdoor Communicators, I assume, from the very beginning too, or very close to the beginning. And man, we just had some great mentors so there. And of course, Joel Vance was especially grand at teaching us, because he was always doing what they call them, tips and stuff, little seminars at the mock conferences. And he also took time out, I know, every year to actually, he went to some university and taught in the summer, I think, and taught quite a riding course. I always wanted to attend those. I think it was up in the northeast part of the United States at a university, but never did make one of those, but I wish I could have, man. But, you know, the Missouri Outdoor Communicators, and I assume a lot of the other riders' organizations are kind of the same. They're kind of aging, but we have had an influx of younger riders into the Missouri Outdoor Communicators, and I almost feel sorry for the kids. I think we embarrass them, because we just smother them, you know. We just want to do all kinds of things for them to help them out, you know, suggest trips to go on, hook them up with other people, other destinations, and all those sort of things. But hey, somebody helped us, so we need to return the favor.
I feel a bit bad for them, actually. When I got in the business, and you and I got in the business about a year apart, I think probably there was well over 100 different magazines we could write for any given month.
Exactly.
And now there's not. Now there's a considerably less markets to write for. There's less newspaper now than there's ever been. I still do newspaper, but there's not much left in the country. And it's just a lot of that old good old boy stuff that we grew up on is kind of gone. And I feel bad for them, because they have less markets to write for.
Boy, that is absolutely true. And we've seen some of the big magazines go under. You know, Cabela's Outfitter Journal has gone. I know Game and Fish Publications used to have a publication about every state, and now they've condensed. I know Missouri has probably got, Midwest Game and Fish now. I think it's probably 6 or 7 states, and I seldom even see a Missouri writer in that magazine anymore. When they condense like that, I just gave up working for them after 28 years. But we've seen so many magazines go under, and of course social media came along, and it's a grand thing, but that's kind of tough on the old timers to learn that social media stuff very well. And it's just incredible what's happened.
A lot of blogs,
but it's interesting. I do a radio show also for Cowtown USA, just right here out of Cuba, Missouri. And Rick Namath, the owner, we were just talking yesterday, and he was a little skeptical about starting a radio program. It's been a little over a year ago. I said, "Well, all you can do is try it and see if it helps your business, you know." And so we took off on a 3-month trial, and he liked it. Got enough results from it that we've kept doing that. But he had a gentleman come into his business about a month ago who's big in social media. I mean, huge, works for a lot of big companies. And I think he's about to talk Rick Namath into going that route. And he was a little concerned. He's brought it up a couple of times. He said, "Bill, it may be ending the radio program." I said, "Well, that's fine with me. I told you when I started, I could go either way. But I sat there and kind of encouraged him because I said, you know, radio's not what it used to be. Newspapers are about gone, and a lot of this paper advertising is pretty much gone. Social media is the king right now. And he talked about young man had come in and talked to him, does social media for the largest Ford dealership in the country. And that guy does no newspaper advertising, no radio advertising, and I think very little TV advertising anymore. It's almost all social media. So that's where things have gone and are going to continue to go into the foreseeable future.
They could save $1 jillion by going online instead of print.
Oh, absolutely. And anybody can do it.
You and I were very fortunate. We got to meet a lot of our heroes, and we got to write. Heck, you and I, between the two of us, we've written several thousand stories in magazines and newspapers.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't trade that career for anything, because I've met, you know, through that process, I've met people like yourself. And can you remember, I'm going to see if you can tell me, the very first media camp you ever attended?
Media camp would have been OWAA, would have been Des Moines, Iowa, back in, maybe the late 70s.
Yeah, a while ago. Yeah, I think Ray I probably invited me to first media camp. He got a hold of me and he said, I'd like for you to come to my media camp. I said, what is that? I didn't know if he said meat camp or what. So the education began.
One day I walked into one of the conference or one of the rooms there, and there sat Gritz Gresham, the guy you see on the light beer commercials, and Claire Conley. He was the outdoor editor of Outdoor Life at the time, and just a whole bunch of people like that, just famous people. And one of them said, "Hey, come sit down, have a beer with us."
Wow.
Man, I don't know how fast I moved that chair, but I had a beer. Within seconds, I had a beer in my hand, and I was there. My eyes were probably as big as beach balls.
Oh, yeah. Hey, can you remember those days when you were starting to meet those outdoor celebrity types, you know? You were just I'm sure you were the same way. I'm just so afraid I was going to say something wrong, or, you know, step on my tongue, or say something out of order, you know. I was just on pins and needles. But, you know, I found out all those famous people that you and I grew up worshiping, they're people just like us, you know.
Hey, you know, that's the thing. I was exactly like you said. I mean, I was like, oh, God, I'm going to say something stupid. Every once in a while, they would say something stupid.
Yeah,
exactly. They would laugh at you and say, I know what you mean, and then they'd go right on with it. They didn't try to belittle you. In fact, the first time I met Uncle Homer Circle, who is just, in my mind, is like a god of outdoor writing, he sat down and asked me about my career and what I was doing, instead of talking about himself. But I really wanted to ask him questions, and he was asking me questions about me. And
that's cool. And I
got that man, and that's why we call him Uncle Homer Circle, because everybody that knew him real well called him Uncle.
Yeah.
Uncle Homer.
Well, that sounded like he showed an interest in every individual.
And every darn one of us.
Yeah.
He was like one of the fathers of outdoor writing for many of us. Bill Bennett of the St. Joe News Press was another one that took interest in my career and helped me a lot. Him and Joel Vance were best friends, and I was very blessed to have him, too.
Yeah. Well, man, if we sit down and made a list, both of us have, I'm sure, dozens and dozens of people that have helped us out along the way. And, man, and that's some of the most memorable things about, you know, I got a 54-year outdoor career going here now. And, boy, just hundreds and hundreds of people I've met over the decades. And, you know, that's all the way from Alaska to the Yucatan. Of course, I spent the better part of the last 15 years working part-time in the Yucatan. I worked 3 years for the Kemp H.J. State Tourism Commission and private outfitters after that, and met so many neat people in that regard, you know, and I even helped set up a turkey hunting camp that Linda Powell attended, along with Ray I and a bunch of big-time outdoor riders. So, man, just getting to meet people in the industry like that is just what makes it. And, you know, I just turned 75 years old, but I still go to an occasional conference. And usually the reason I go to conferences anymore is not particularly to try to learn a new skill, but to see old friends like yourself. You're the one reason I still go to.
And you and I have been friends over 40 years. And
wow.
You know, yeah, I know. It's a long time to know me, isn't it?
It is.
You know, but, you know, I'm very, very proud of your career and what you've accomplished. And I am very proud to say that in August, you're going to be inducted into the America's Legends of the Outdoors. And that is one heck of a big deal.
Well, it just totally shocks me, Kenny, and I just don't know where that all really came from. But it is a grand feeling that, I spent decades in this field and not expecting to do a whole lot, and certainly don't compare myself to some of the people being inducted with me, like Bill Jordan and Will Primos, and there's four or five others, all just big names in the outdoor industry. And I think I'm probably the only outdoor communicator or such being inducted this round. But what a grand feeling. But, you know, I can't, and I'm sure I've got to give a little speech. I haven't even started writing that yet. I hope they don't give me a lot of time, but I don't intend to talk about myself. I want to talk about the people who helped me along the way. And I understand you're attending as well. And don't be too embarrassed if I tell a couple of wild stories on you, you know, because I haven't known you a long, long time, and I know a lot about you.
Every time you say something off color, I'm going to blow a duck call.
Well, in that case, happened to me like it happened to Spence Turner one time. We were at a conference. I can't remember if OWA or MOC, but Spence had a little bit to drink. You know, we were sitting around in a little lobby or something. Temp, he just told a pretty raunchy story, you know, and he didn't quite get to the ending, the real punchline, till Joan, his wife, grabbed him by the ear and jerked him up out of his chair. And, you know, he was a rather round, heavy little guy, and I'm sure that stretched his ear a foot or two, you know. But Joan, right in front of everybody, she said, "Spencer, it's time for you to go to bed."
So years ago, Spence and I were fishing on one of the docks down by Lake of the Ozarks, and it was at a writer's conference, and we were fly fishing. And Spence somehow, being Spence, got a popping bug stuck on his rear. Oh. And he's holding the rod, and the line goes over there, and the hook's in his rear. Oh. And I'm down there trying to, with a pair of pliers, trying to dig it out. Oh. Here comes Joel Vance down the bank. He saw us. He turned and just walked with the other direction.
Oh, my goodness. Those kind of stories is priceless. That's what I say. You and I, if we live long enough, we need to get our heads together and write a book. Well,
I don't believe we could do it. I believe we could write a pretty good book.
I believe we could. Well, Kenny, I need to take just a short break here so we can hear from some of today's sponsors. But don't you go away, and folks, don't you all go away either, because, hey, we're going to talk duck hunting in the second segment of the show. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Stoltz with Drury Outdoors, and you're listening to Living the Dream Outdoors Podcast with Phil Cooper and Hunter Heineman.
Slow down and enjoy the simple things in life. Welcome to Huzal Valley Resort, providing family fun since 1979. They offer floating, and you can choose from canoes, rafts, kayaks, and inner tubes on a beautiful, crystal clear Huzal River. Lodging, let us be your home away from home. Choose from a variety of lodging units while still enjoying the great outdoors. With over 2.5 miles of river camping on the crystal clear Huzal, we're sure you and your family will find the perfect spot to pitch your tent or park your RV. Have fun and let us help you get the most of your stay. Check out our guided trail rides and Karen's Cafe menu. There's something for everyone at Huzal. There's a campground store on site that has everything you need for your trip. Whether you're in need of gear, grub, or something else, chances are they've got it. And their campground has RV sites and primitive sites for all your camping needs. If you like the adventures of camping with a cozy bed at night, we have a variety of different lodging units to choose from. But Huzal Valley, there's always something going on out there. Check them out on Facebook, or if you want to make a reservation, simply call 1-800-367-4516.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
Hey everybody, this is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. Check out my buddy's podcast show, Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper and Hunter Hindman. You're really going to enjoy this week's show.
Well, I started hunting in what was then the Squaw Creek, which is now the Lost Bluffs region, in 1965 with my dad and my grandfather. And we hunted up there, several times. And every chance I got from then on, I was up there hunting and learning how to call ducks and driving people crazy, trying to learn how to call use a duck call and and learning how to use a goose call. And then days I had a fox goose call, and I had a Lohmann duck call. Lohmann was a Missouri brand, by the way.
Right. Brad Harris used to work for them, I think, a long time ago.
Yeah, Brad Harris did indeed work for him, and he did a great job with him too. Another thing happened years later. A major group was going to put a power grid right down the Mound City bottoms, all the way up to the what was then Squaw Creek Refuge, right up to their border, and then started on the other side of the border. It was supposed to be like 60 foot wide and like 120 feet high.
Wow!
So you could with just probably who knows how many cables hanging off of it. You could only imagine what a conservation disaster that would have been. It would have killed just jillions of ducks and geese on a cloudy on a foggy night or whatever. And so when they contacted me and said, hey, help us with this, we can't let this happen. So I did newspaper articles on it, but then I started contacting conservation publications around the country. And by the time it was all over, The company who I won't mention that was going to do it received over several thousand replies from people protesting them doing it, with all kinds of threats that they will set up protest lines and everything else if you continue to do this, because everybody realized what a conservation disaster that would have been. This is one of the major stopovers in the Mississippi Flyway.
Exactly.
So I was successful in blocking that. Plus, I've written volumes on that hunting up in there. So that's the reason they put me in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. Well, that's good enough reason. I knew you'd done a lot of duck hunting and written a lot of stories, but I don't think I've ever heard you talk about that battle over the, what was it, power lines or whatever?
Exactly. It was probably where the power of the pen was more powerful than I ever imagined it would be.
Yeah,
it's a very powerful group, and I didn't think I had a prayer, but
yeah,
I got it done.
Yeah, well, congratulations, and that was quite a feat, and I'm sure certainly bolstered your confidence in your writing abilities, because when you can fight battles and help win a conservation issue like that, man, you deserve the accolades and the pats on the back. And I'm sure when something like that happens and your name's connected to it, as well as me, that opens lots of doors for you. I'm sure you've had lots of people comment over that over the year, and it probably brought some other jobs your well as way. So very well done. Well, I'm interested in history, probably not as much as you, Kenny, but I'm curious about when you got into this Hall of Fame. I'm sure that you hunted with a lot of the old characters. Any real characters that you recall from those days as duck hunters?
There was one old feller up there, and I can't even remember his first name. It's been so long, but I did indeed hunt with him, an old bald-headed fella who never carried a gun to the blind, but he carried a little bottle of about 80 proof and a duck call.
Really?
and the more he drank, the better he called.
Really?
And back in the day, this guy, he said that his words, he said that some of the, he called it the Kansas City Mafia, but I don't know. It was some of the powers that be in Kansas City anyway, would send an airplane up there and get ducks. And then this was during the market hunting days when it was legal to sell wild ducks. It's not legal now, of course.
Sure.
And they would load up this airplane. And one time they had to put down, and it was so muddy, I don't know how the darn plane landed, but they said they had to put down boards for it to take off again. I've never been able to understand that. I'm not sure that wasn't even true, but that's what he told me. the more this guy drank, the better he called. He was actually with a darn good caller.
That's pretty incredible. Well, just a few years back, I interviewed and actually filmed an old gentleman from Illinois. I can't recall his name either, but he was an old timer, and shared a duck blind with him on the Black River in Arkansas. And it was always pretty interesting listening to him talk. He called the date back in Illinois when he said we were all just heartbroken, man. They come up with a new legislation and told us we couldn't use live decoys anymore. He said, we just knew we'd never kill another duck.
Well, I tell you what, that is one of the reasons why, even as a boy, I was intrigued reading waterfowl stories. And the reason I have such a passion for writing them is exactly what you said one time, the romance of it. It goes back to the market hunting days and before then, when you had people using live decoys and they were, And then on the East and West Coast, they had sneak boats. They would sneak up on the ducks with cannons that were, for the most part, made in Britain and shipped over here. Everybody always said that they put glass and rocks and things, but they didn't because these things were expensive and they were very effective. So they actually put lead shot in them. They made their own lead shot out of wherever they could get lead, I suppose. But they might kill. They might blow off a couple of rounds and knock down 20 ducks or 30 ducks.
Wow.
And pick them up, and they would put them in barrels of ice, and they would ship them back to Boston or New York or whatever, and they would sell them in the open markets. They didn't get them. They didn't take the feathers off. They just threw the ducks in the barrels with the ice and shipped them out.
Wow. Well, boy, I have things.
Never could understand. And in them days, and we're talking the late 1800s into the 1900s, two canvasbacks could bring as much as $10.
Wow.
That's in a day, Bill, when the dollar was still worth a dollar.
Oh, no kidding. That's been a long time ago. Well, I can remember my own dad. We were, of course, raised in Missouri Boot Hill, a lot of waterfowl down in that area, too, the Cypress Swamps and all. But I remember my dad talking about hunting with his dad before the Conservation Department was even formed. They hunted in an area that's now Big Oak Tree State Park, but there was a big lake back in there, very shallow. They called it Old Grassy, but my grandpa Cooper made this long cypress boats that they poled around. And my dad said he was in the seventh grade, and one morning before he went to school, he went back into Old Grassy with his dad. And my dad didn't even have a shotgun. Grandpa Cooper had an old single barrel 12 gauge, you can imagine, you know, and no decoys, nothing like that. They just go back in the swamps and just sit there and wait till the ducks just came in by the tens of thousands. And with a single barrel shotgun, Grandpa killed 140 something ducks that morning before my dad went to school. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I said, what in the world did you do with 140 something ducks? He said, well, we just sacked them up in tow sacks, took them home, threw them on the front porch, and Grandma took care of them. Well, Grandma.
Ooh,
yeah.
Grandma.
Grandma plucked all of those ducks. Of course, she kept the downs for down mattresses and pillows and that sort of thing. And she canned that duck meat. It was their meat supply for the winter. My dad said by spring, I was never so sick anything in my life. So grandma cooked duck every way you could ever imagine.
He was big grassy, Oxbo.
Pardon? Most likely, because it wasn't 2 miles from the Mississippi River, you know, and of course there was all kinds of drainage just down in there. And of course the New Madrid earthquakes changed a lot of things down there. And you had a lot of little pockets of water around in those days. Most of them been drained now, but I can remember. And Kenny, we had a low bottom farm and used to get lots of ducks in on it. I never duck hunted until I got in college. We didn't pay much attention to the ducks, you know.
Yeah, we really didn't either. Nobody really wanted them.
Yeah.
We were spoiled. We had beef and pork, so we didn't think we needed duck.
Yeah.
Another place I want to talk about is Sugar Lake, where I did it's an oxbow that Lewis and Clark noted in their diary as Goslin Lake. And in the 70s, I duck hunted on that quite a bit. I've done a number of stories about it. And the bluebills and the redheads and all the, and every so often a canvasback or two and mallards would just fall on us. It was amazing. But this is before all the big refuse changes in the Missouri and all the big lakes were formed or built.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kenny, you know as well as me, there's nothing like being out in a duck blind before daylight, you know, got those decoys out, and then the skies just get full of ducks, and especially mallards. You know, we're all fans of the mallards, but I'm sure you can recall many, many times that you sat in those duck blinds, and, you know, it just takes your breath away when those flights come in and they zoom across the decoys. Or it's really cool when you're calling to them, they cup those wings, and you know they're going to settle right down into those decoys, and then you get to take a few of those birds home with you. Pretty exciting stuff, isn't it?
The very last thing I love about duck hunting is shooting the ducks.
Oh, absolutely. That's just icing on the cake.
Watching the dogs work, watching the sunrise, watching the sunset, watching the ducks work, and then working the ducks, calling them, and working them, and watching them curve here and there. It's just the best. I mean, I could go to a duck blind without a shotgun. It wouldn't bother me a bit.
Oh, me either. Not in these days. But boy, you're giving me cold chills talking about that kind of stuff. Cause as you were talking, I remember different labs, different dogs that I had over the years, you know, and boy, I just miss those things terribly. And you still got a lab, right?
Rocket Man is downstairs sleeping right now. He had about 20 water retrieves today, and he's down there crashed out on my couch.
Oh, bless his heart. Good for him. He's a smart dog. Well, Ken, in the last 2-3 minutes here, I'd like to go over just a little bit of data. What's the word you've been hearing on duck populations for this year?
I have concerns about the mallards, the bluebills, and I'm not so sure that the pintails are. I don't think any three of them are. The numbers are very good. I don't know if they're horrible, but I think they're down.
Yeah, I read a little bit, and most of them are down around 18-19%, but still above the long-term national average, you know, so at least that's good to hear. But, they are down a little bit, and water up north, I think, has been in short supply in most places. I think straight up north from us finally got some rains, but even on the east side of Canada and the west side, it started out pretty dry this summer, so that's probably what affected the numbers. But we're still going to have duck season, man. Teal season coming up September the 7th and runs through September the 22nd. Are you going teal hunting this year?
Yeah, expect I'll get out there and make a few whistles at them and see what happens. I'm looking very, very forward just to seeing some of the old hunting buddies and getting out with them.
Oh, absolutely, man. And I tell you what, teal hunting, if listeners, if you've never been, you'd like to try teal hunting, this is the duck to go try it out on. I love to take kids teal hunting because teal are pretty easy. If they see the decoys, they're going to try to get into them. And quite often when I got youngsters along, I let the ducks light right in the decoys and flush them. That gives the kids a straightaway shot. But looking beyond teal season, man, we got lots of waterfowl seasons this year. There's a Canada goose season, starts October the 5th, runs through the 13th, and then November the 11th through February the 6th, pretty long season. I like to hunt those local geese on, area ponds and small lakes. You still do any of that, Kenny?
Yeah, occasionally. It's kind of a turkey shoot, though. I mean, those things just kind of flop in on you at 20 yards, just kind of hang there.
Yeah. I'm getting old enough, though. I like those easy shots. I've got a farm pond not too far from me I'm allowed to hunt on. It's probably 3 acres. And there's local geese that I think they make the rounds between the golf course and the Walmart super center, distribution center, whatever. They got lots of short grass around, you know. And yeah, it over to Veteran Soldiers Home, I think, and the St. James Park. Everybody hates them.
I got time to tell you a real quick story.
Absolutely. Always good for a good story.
up at Mound City area, and I was hunting with Paul Nick, the great legend of Ducks Unlimited and one of the great hunters of our time, one of the greatest callers I've ever been on. You have been in a blind with him.
Yeah.
You've heard him call.
Yeah.
And I was with him and his two sons. And this darn mallard drake hung on my end of the blind. And I emptied my gun at him, and he flew away. And one of the boys tapped me on the shoulder, had me a bucket of shells, said, "You're probably going to need this before the day's over."
Hey, we've all had days like that, man. You know, I remember taking my older brother one time, first time he'd been, the first duck to come in, dropped that duck. Boy, I was feeling pretty smug, but you know what? That's the only duck I got out of a box of shells.
First duck I ever shot in my life was 2 teal. I hit with 1 410 shell.
Oh, well, that's the ones you want to remember.
It was dumb beginner's luck is all that was.
Hey, it counts, though. But, hey, moving right along with those seasons, the regular duck and coot seasons in the north zone and the middle zone will open November the 2nd. And that north zone, it'll run through the 31st of December, and then that middle zone till January 5th. I mean, there's lots of other waterfowl seasons that come and go as well. You know, the light goose season and November 11th to February 6th. And then later on, we still have that conservation order goes on, you know, for the light geese, snow geese. And gosh, that's a wonderful season because you can get out. You can kill all of them you want to, you know. And it don't take me long till I've had enough of them. But they are fun to hunt, hard to hunt. But you can use electronic collars, take the plugs out of your shotguns, and it's a good time, particularly with a large group of guys. Well, Kenny, man, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the program. I hope you won't be a stranger. And I'll see you August 17th, I guess, down at Bass Pro Shop at the Legend of the Outdoors.
You betcha. And I'm gonna make faces at you, and you're up there talking too.
Well, you know, you're old enough to know about payback, so I'd be real careful. Well, folks, from Kenny Keyser and myself, we both have lived our outdoor dreams in our lifetimes, and we both again encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your outdoor dreams. I'm Bill Cooper.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, The Fallen Outdoors, Ledco Sinkers and Lure Company, Turnbow Outdoors, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Big Ed's Guide Service, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, On the Hook TV, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, Spare Rib Inn in Steelville, Missouri, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.